So my father sent me an article, and it had to do with a topic that we've talked about in the past. So I wrote to him, I said, this is a great shiur topic. I'm going to try to prepare a shiur for the guys on this topic. So this article is in the Detroit Free Press, Todd Spangler, November 24, 2017. Self-driving cars programmed to decide who dies in a crash. Consider this hypothetical. It's a bright sunny day and you're alone in your spanking new self-driving vehicle. Okay? Sprinting along the two-lane tunnel of trees on M119, high above Lake Michigan, north of Harbor Springs. I guess if you're from Detroit, you know the scene. You're sitting back, enjoying the view. You're looking out through the trees, trying to get a glimpse of the crystal blue water below you, moving along at the 45-mile-an-hour speed limit, because it's a self-driving car, so I imagine it doesn't go faster than the speed limit. As you approach a rise in the road, heading south, a school bus appears, driving north, driven by a human, and it veers sharply towards you. There's no time to stop safely. I guess there's a way to, overpower the system and take over the controls, turn off, what's that called when the plane drives?
Autopilot,
right? There's no time to stop safely and no time for you to take control of the car. Does the car, A, swerve sharply into the trees, possibly killing you, but saving the bus and its occupants? Turn to page 47. B, perform a sharp, evasive maneuver around the bus and into the oncoming lane, possibly saving you, but sending the bus and its driver swerving into the trees, killing her and some of the children on board. Or C, hit the bus, possibly killing you as well as the driver and kids on the bus. See, in everyday driving, no-win choices are maybe exceedingly rare. We'll have to talk to Todd Spangler about that. Maybe exceedingly rare, but when they happen, what should a self-driving car programmed in advance do? Or in any situation, even a less dire one, where a moral snap judgment must be made? It's not just a theoretical question anymore, with prediction that in a few years, tens of thousands of semi-autonomous vehicles may be on the roads. About $80 billion has been invested in the field. Tech companies are working feverishly on them, with Google-affiliated Waymo among those testing cars in Michigan, and mobility companies like Uber and Tesla racing to beat them. So there's every reason, next paragraph, there's every reason to be excited. Self-driving vehicles will ease commutes, return lost time to workers, enhance mobility for seniors and those with physical challenges, and sharply reduce the more than 35,000 deaths on U.S. highways each year, right? There's no or very little room for human error with a car that's programmed how to drive. And you can't, texting again to an accident. You can't fall asleep because the car avoids all of those problems. So the assumption is that it's going to save many, many lives. But there are also nagging questions to be sorted out, such as this question. What happens when there's a no-win situation? There's going to be an accident. And as it says here, there will be crashes. Unusual things will happen. Trees will fall. Animals or kids will dart out in front of the car. And they need to make the decision, how should the car respond in such a situation? It's unaddressed in legislation, but these are some of the questions of who's going to make these ethical decisions. A kid runs out in front of the car. Do you, chas v'shalom, hit the kid? Or do you swerve and maybe kill yourself to avoid the kid who ran in front of the road? Or do you avoid a group of people, as that's the question that was posed here. There's a group of people. Do you swerve out of the way, avoiding those people, but possibly killing an innocent bystander on the side of the road? So, I'm sorry. I was wondering why you were standing here the whole time. Okay. Sure. So this is the question that we need to that I'd like to address, or at least try to address, from a halachic perspective. What would the halacha say about such a situation? So let's begin. In general, we know that killing someone is one of the arei v'al yavors, and we do not kill a life even to save a life. So if someone comes to your head and puts a gun to your head and says, kill this person or I will kill you, the halacha is you do not kill in order to save your life. This is the first source on the sheet, the famous Gemara, Pesachim Chafem and Beis, Ushvichas Damim Gufei Minalon. How do we know? It's some Pesachim that comes up elsewhere. Ushvichas Damim Gufei Minalon. How do we know that it's one of the Arvi Al Yavors? So the Gemara says, Svarahu. Really, it's a svara. What's the svara? Ki ahuda os lekami derava. Amar le mari dure amar li. He told me zil katle lepalnia. Go kill so and so. Vilo katilna katlina lecha. And if not, I'll kill you. Amar le likdaluch velo tiktol. You should be killed and do not kill. Now you realize this doesn't mean that you should physically kill yourself. It means you should allow yourself to be killed. It's a whole different question. Should you kill yourself rather than killing someone? Should I drive my car into the wall and actually with my own hands kill myself rather than kill someone? That's not what the Gemara here says. The Gemara says, let him kill you rather than you kill someone else. Why? Because my chazis, the dama di doch sumach tvei, dilma dama de ahugavra sumach tvei. How do you know your blood is redder than his blood? How do you know that your life is worth more than his life? We can't play God. God decides whose life is more valuable. And therefore, if the choice is you die or he dies, you're not going to be able to make a decision. And therefore, you have to tell the person, listen, I don't want to die, but I can't kill. So if you want to kill me, go ahead and kill me. This is the famous Gemara about Yarig V'al Yavar by murder. So this is all when we're talking about one person versus another person. What happens, though, when it's a group? What if someone comes to me and says, kill this one person, or else I will kill your whole family, or this whole group of people. We're in Shir here. Someone, Chas Shalom, opens the door and says, let me kill one of you, or else I'm killing all of you. Then, at what point are you allowed to say, thank you, the blood of all of us is worth more than the blood of one person? Did the Gemara mean you can't choose one over one? Or did the Gemara mean you can't even choose 50 over one? So, one place where this seems to be addressed is the Tosefta and Trumos. Take a look at the second source on the sheet. Siya shel b'nei Adam, a group of people. Sh'amru lehem goyim, tenu lanu echad mikem b'nar gayu. Give us one of you, and we will kill him. V'im lav, hare anu hargin es kulchem. And if not, we're going to kill all of you. Okay, hand over one, or we will kill all of you. So says the Gemara, says the Tosefta, Yahargu kulan, the al yimsiru lahem nefesh achas mi Yisrael. The din is, you still have to die. You cannot give over one person. So, when it's one person, so the din is, Yehareg the al yavor. According to the Tosefta, even if it's a group, a siya shel b'nei Adam, also yehargu v'al yimsor. You can't give over one person. You all have to die. Surprised? No, that's what you assumed.
So you can't choose one guy.
Okay. Now the Gemara says, aval, says the Tosefta, aval. Aval im yehargu im, excuse me, aval im yachduhu lahem kigon shi yachdu l'sheva ben bichri yitnu lahem bial yehargu kulon. Now the Gemara tells us something very important. Din number two, im yachdu or yachduhu. What does that mean, yachduhu? If they singled out one person, they didn't knock on the door here and say, give us one of you or we'll kill all of you. They said, give us, who's going to be our volunteer? Give us Yaakov, or else we'll kill all of you. If they say, give him specifically, wow, you guys can deal with that later. If they say, give us one of you, and they choose someone specifically, so then the halacha is, you fork him over. That's the din. And the Gemara chooses a precedent for this. And the precedent for this is Sheva ben Bichri. Who was Sheva ben Bichri? Anyone remember him from Tanakh? He led a revolt against David HaMelech. And the revolt was unsuccessful. And David's army surrounded the city of, what was it, Macha, I forgot that second part of the name, Macha ben something, a city where he was hiding. They surrounded his city. Evel Beis Macha. They surrounded the city of Evel Beis Macha where he was hiding, and they said to the people in the city, either give him over or we're going to kill all of you. And there was a wise woman in the city who said, this is ridiculous. Why should we die for him? And She convinced the town people to kill him, cut off his head, and throw his head over the wall of the city, so that way David's army would see that he was killed, and they wouldn't kill the people in the city. And that's what the Navi quotes, and it seemingly quotes her as an Isha Chachama, praising what she did, that was the right thing to do. So the Tosefta uses that. Kigon Shiachtu L'Sheva Ben Bichri. Just like by Sheva Ben Bichri, they came and they said, give us him or we'll kill you. That's why, if they choose one person, you're allowed to give over that person. Yes?
How do you
What do you mean that he wasn't a great guy? Say better than you don't mean that he wasn't a great guy. Speak more legally. He's chayav misa. Excellent. Very good. So hold on. I'll take your question in a second. Take a look what the Gemara says. The Tosefta. So that's the Psak and the Tosefta. Comes along Rav Yehuda. Amar Rav Yehuda. B'midavar mamurim. What are we referring to? Bizman she hu bachutz v'hein bifnim. When does the Reisha say... when does the Seifa say that if they choose someone, you're allowed to... When is it Usser? When does the Reisha say it's Usser? When he's outside and they're inside. However, Bizman Shehu Bifnim, Behem Bifnim, if they're all inside, Hoil Vihu Nerag, Behem Neragin, Yitnu Lehen, V'al Yahargu Kulon. So Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, if he's going to die anyway, if he's outside... and he's able to escape, and they're all inside, then they can't give him over. But if he's inside with them, and he's going to die anyway, so that's when you're allowed to give them over. And that was the case of Sheva ben Bichri. He was inside the city with them. Anyway, if they would have stormed the city, they would have killed all the people in the city, and him also. So when does the Seifa say that if they choose someone, im yachduhu, it's mutter to give him over? That's only in a case where he's going to die anyway and they're going to die. But if he has an ability to escape, even if they choose him, then you're not allowed to give him over. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Comes along Rabbi Shimon.
How would you even possibly be able to?
You can catch him. If they call and they say... So let's say there's an escape tunnel. Right, there's an escape tunnel. He's able to escape through the escape tunnel. And he's able to get out and save himself. But then they're going to come in and kill all of you. Are you allowed to take him? You know, it's like, you know, unfortunately, it's like a situation with the Nazis. The Nazis come and say, give us so-and-so. They come to the doors of the ghetto, they say, give us so-and-so, or else we're going to kill the whole ghetto. Now, he could escape that night. He'll escape over the wall that night, he'll run into the woods and he'll escape. And, you know, okay, most of the people didn't escape to the woods because they're not going to fare any better in the woods. And right now, the Nazis allowed them to live in the ghetto. They haven't liquidated the ghetto. So people had to make a decision. Should they leave? Should they stay? But he could leave. If you know that the town, you know, you're in the town, you know that they're looking for you, you can escape. Can other people grab you and give you over? So Rav Shimon says, Rav Shimon, this is the consensus of how most Mefarshim understand. Rav Shimon or Rav Yehuda? Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is putting an additional qualification when it's mutter. When is it mutter? It's only if he has no way to escape. He's going to die anyway. So according to, and that was the case with Sheva. Sheva ben Bichri was stuck in the city with them. There was no escape tunnel. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, when are you allowed to give over one person? That's what we're trying to clarify here. Are you ever allowed to save the group by killing one person? So according to the Tosefta, normally you're not allowed to. But if they chose a person, you can. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda and says, and there's another qualification. He has to be that he's going to die anyway. Comes along, we have one more opinion in the Tosefta. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kach Amro Lehem, Kol HaMorei B'Malchus Beis David Chayev Misa. Rabbi Shimon adds a different qualification. This case is different, as Aryeh said. Aryeh, what did you say? This is not just any person. Who is this? This is a person who's Chayiv Misa. It's a Morei B'Malchus. He was Morei B'Malchus based of it. So of course they were able to give him over. So says Rav Shimon, the only precedent that we have from Sheva ben Bichri is if the person is also Chayiv Misa. So we have a machlokes. When are you able to give somebody over to save a group? First of all, it has to be certainly not an innocent bystander. It has to be someone who was singled out. And in addition, it has to either be someone who's also Chayav Misa anyway, that's a very strict reading, or at least someone who's going to die anyway. This is the view of Rabbi Shimon.
One or the other?
Well, Rabbi Shimon says you need both someone chosen and that he's going to die anyway. And Rabbi Yehuda says you need someone who's singled out and someone who's Chayav Misa. This is the general consensus of how to understand Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Let me just point out one point of Eon here for a second. Just try to keep with me. The way we explained it right now is that they are adding a further qualification that you need in order to avail yourself of the heter to give someone over. Even though it says, you can, the Tanakhama says, that as long as they chose a person, you're allowed to give them over. Hillel, you with me? Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon added another qualification. It could be, and there might be some who read this way, I think it's the pashtus of the Tosefta, even though it's going to be hard to swallow this, lahalacha. The pashtus of the Tosefta sounds like Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are not talking about the heter, they're being machmir. They're not being machmir on the heter. That's the standard explanation. They're being machmir on the heter. But it could be that they're being makil on the original psak. The original psak was with a non-specified individual. This is where they specify someone. What about in a non-specified case? A totally innocent person. They knock on the door and they say, give us one of you. They don't say, give us Yaakov. They say, give us one of you. Can you kick someone out to them, fork someone over? The answer is no. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda and says, whoa, wait a second. If he's going to die anyway, if you're all going to die anyway, then you can give someone over. And comes along Rabbi Shimon and says, no. You can only give someone over if he's Chayav Misa. You can't just give over a Stam guy. It's got to be someone who's already Chayav Misa. If you learn the Tosefta like that, so then Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are actually being makil on the ratio. So there's a little bit of a question here, if Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are being machmir on the Seifa or being makel on the Resha. Do you understand the difference, the two ways I read it?
Isn't Rabbi Shimon being machmir on the not specified?
What was that?
Isn't he being machmir on the not specified? Because you just said that.
Well, he's saying that this Isser, there is a Kula. It's just he's not as makel. You are sometimes allowed to give over a non-specified person. But it has to be someone who's Chayav Misa. Meaning the Tanakhama said, you can never give over a non-specified person. Yeah. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda and says, yes you can, if everyone's going to die anyway. And says Rabbi Shimon, yes you can, if he's Chayav Misa. So they're being more makil than the Tanakhama. Okay, that's an interesting question. Yeah?
Two questions. When are you ever going to find a scenario that they're not all going to die? The people are threatening that we're going to kill all of you unless you hand this person over. So of course,
maybe they say, give us one of you, or if not, we'll kill five of you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Also, what does it mean, die anyway? Because,
so in that situation, he's not necessarily going to die. Uh-huh. But if they say, give me one of you, or we'll kill all of you, including him, right. So then that could be different. We're going to come back to this alternate reading in a second. We still have more information we need to learn. So then according to that, they were never commenting on this case. And as soon as they ask for a specific person, you're allowed to give them over.
Even if it's like a hospital
bedelador? Doesn't matter. As soon as they ask for someone specific, you're allowed to give them over. That would, if they're going on that. But we're not done with the Makoros yet.
How do you decide if
everyone's Chayav Misa? If everyone's Chayav Misa, then seemingly you could choose someone.
You get over and everyone else can look.
What was that?
How do you decide that one?
I don't know. They draw straws, maybe? 21st finger? So that's interesting, if you can commit suicide in this situation, yeah. There's a famous Gemara in Tanis, where, again, it's not the same case, but there were two people Jews, who confessed to a crime. It's Gemara in Tanis. Yeah, exactly, the Haruge Lud. Their names were like Lulius and Papus, right. And they admitted to a crime that they didn't do in order to save the community, because the Gentiles were going to kill the entire community, right? I'm getting the case right? So they, on their own, volunteered to die in order. So that would suggest that it's okay.
In the Haruge
right, right. That case also, right.
So let's say a trait that
affected that. So, that's what I said. It's an interesting question. Yeah, it's an interesting question.
Yehuda says that who is fine, like, the guy that they selected out, not fine, like, a guy that they choose.
Say it again.
Says Shehuva, who is the guy they choose outside the heart.
And that would imply that he's talking about a specified case. Yes, I think some of the Mefarshim point that out. Very good. Okay. So, there is, this Tosefta is quoted in the Gemara, it's not quoted anywhere in the Bavli, this Tosefta. But it is quoted in the Yerushalmi, but only the first half of it. Not with their opinions, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Only the first half of it is quoted in the Yerushalmi, and there's a Machlokas Amuroim about it. Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. And Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan say specifically about the Seifa, they say the same two opinions as Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Take a look, did I include it for you? Yeah. Tani, fourth source. Sios b'nei adam shayim ha'alchen b'derech pagulem goyim v'amru tenu lanu echad mikem v'narogo sov yimlav v'enu horgim es kulchem afilu kulam ne'arogim and lo v'yimtsu nefesh achas mi'Yisrael. But yichdu lahen echad kigon shav ben bichri yimsru oso v'al yehargu. Give him over. Amr of Shimon ben Lakish v'hu shiachayev misa kishav ben bichri. When we say in the Seifa that you're allowed to give over someone who is singled out, he's got to be Chayiv Misa like Sheva ben Bichri. And Rav Yochanan says, no, even if he's not Chayiv Misa like Sheva ben Bichri. So here it's very clear that what are these Amoraim commenting on, the Reisha or the Seifa? They're clearly commenting on the Seifa. And they're saying that in the case of the Seifa, the heter to give over somebody who was singled out is only either someone who's going to die anyway, or someone who's chayiv misa. So for sure, this is what Rav Yochanan holds, and this is what Reish Lakish holds. So we don't know, based on our analysis so far, are Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish just having the same machlokas as Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? They're Tanoim, they're Amorayim. Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish are Amorayim. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, it's Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. They're having the same machlokas, or are Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish having the machlokas about the Seifa, and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are having the machlokas about the Reisha? But be that as it may, I'd like to focus for a few minutes on the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. According, let's just say it out again, according to Reish Lakish, even if they single out a single person, you're not allowed to give him over unless he's already Chayav Misa, unless he's already a dead man walking. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, if they singled out a person, and he's going to die anyway, so you're allowed to give him over. So let's analyze that machlokas for a few minutes. Let me ask you, which shita, what question am I about to ask you? Which shita, Abi, what am I about to say? Good, which shita makes more sense and doesn't require explanation, and which one requires more explanation? What would you have said? If someone comes to the door right now and says, give us Yaakov or we'll kill all of you, Reish Lakish would say you can't give him over because Yaakov's not Chayav Misa. And Rav Yochanan would say, give him over. You're all going to die anyway. He's going to die anyway, so you can give him over. Which shita do you think makes more sense? Raise your hand if you think Reish Lakish. And Reish Lakish, raise your hand if you think Rav Yochanan. Who would argue? I understand you wouldn't be the one to be the person to hand him over, and certainly not the one to kick him out the door. But who thinks that if that situation happens, they would argue that the more logical thing to do is to give him over? And who would argue not to give him over? Let's see. Raise your hands if you say give him over. Raise your hands high. None of this like half raising hand. The guy who's not Chayav Misa, but he's part of the group. And they're going to kill everybody. Should you give over the one and save the group? Okay. Give. People right now raising their hands are saying give. Okay.
Rebbe, it depends. If it's like your brother, they just be thinking now you're not going to give him.
Okay, let's assume it's not your brother. Let's assume it's just a regular person. You don't even know him. You don't even like him so much. You don't even like Yaakov. In your head, you're saying, he's not Chayav Misa, but he should be. Okay, so most of you raised your hand and said you should give him over. And I hear, Rabbi Yochanan makes sense. I mean, he's going to die anyway. So what is Reish Lakish holding? I'd like to try to get an understanding of Reish Lakish. What is Reish Lakish holding? What's the machlokas over? If everyone's going to die anyway, why can't you give him over?
You're picking someone. after you're deciding. You're still deciding.
You're not deciding. He's going to die anyway. I'm not deciding he's going to die. They say, give him over in the next 10 seconds. Okay, listen. I have a machine gun right here, okay? 10 seconds, give him over, or I'm gunning you all down anyway.
He wasn't declared dead already.
He's a dead man. 10 seconds. If they tied you up to a pole, okay, and the firing squad was standing there, and they said, "We're going to count to 10, Moshe, and it's all over," you wouldn't consider yourself a dead man already?
No. I can still miss.
What do you mean? The Gemara says that if a guy comes in, are you saying?
You're chai mis until you're dead.
Okay, so first.
That case is possible to avoid.
What?
Who said a gun was stronger than a person's heel?
No.
You're saying I'm sticking. I'm equating too much Rav Yochanan with Rav Yehuda, because Rav Yehuda said explicitly, "Hu v'hein ne'aragin." So you want to say, according to Rav Yochanan, what could you argue? That according to Rav Yochanan, even if he's not going to die anyway, so even more so, we have to understand Rav Yochanan. Oh, you're saying, I'm saying. You're saying that, no, maybe Rav Yochanan needs more explanation, because maybe Rav Yochanan says, even if he's not going to die, if they pick a guy, you're allowed to give him over. Even if he's not going to die anyway.
For sure.
So then, what was that?
For sure.
For sure what?
There's a chance he could still die. For sure he's going to survive.
No, but he's saying that he's not necessarily going to die.
He said, because she ain't no 5 minutes. The guy's not 5 minutes. So, therefore, he's not...
I hear. You're saying that within Rav Yochanan, it's not necessarily muchruch that the guy's going to die anyway. And then our question, maybe then Rav Yochanan needs more explanation. Okay, I hear that. We'll keep that on the side burner for now. Let's go through a few possible explanations. I want to run through with you three or four explanations of the machlokas Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. One explanation is, there's a question here, is murder just categorically considered usur? Or do we look at the greater utilitarian good? Right? Utilitarian, like... You look at, like, what's the greater good for the population? For the greater group, what's the greater good? So certainly from the perspective of, you know, the greater group, so it's certainly better to give over Yaakov. We'll all live. It's unfortunate for Yaakov. But you know what? Yaakov's going to die anyway. And maybe, Aryeh, maybe we can even make the argument, if we're, you know, real utilitarians, maybe we can even make the argument, you know, from the word utility. Like, what do we get the most bang for our buck out of? What's our utility here? You know, there are 25 people in the room. Should be 25 people in the room. And anyway, you know, for 25 people to die is very sad. Very sad. Listen, for Yaakov to die is sad. But, like, it's not the same thing as 25 people dying. Yaakov's like, why did I choose to be the... It makes more sense from a utilitarian perspective. I mean, if you asked anyone, like from a moral perspective, Yonah, what would you say? What's morally right? Give over one person and save 25, or have 25 people die, even if he can escape? In a Hanami, we never know what's going to be in the future, but right now, morally, like if I asked you, you could do something right now. You could press a button that would kill one person, or press a button that will kill 25 people. So certainly, the utilitarian perspective would say, kill the 25. So you're right, as like a lamdan, there's a difference. But at the end of the day, your decision, at the end of the day, there's either going to be one corpse on the floor, or there's going to be 25 corpses on the floor, directly because of your decision. So from a utilitarian perspective, we want one corpse, not 25. And it could be that that's Rav Yochanan's perspective. But Reish Lakish learns, no, murder is categorically usur. You cannot kill. Oh, but we'll save 20. You can't look at it that way. You cannot kill. And therefore, it's categorically usur. Categorically means, without looking at any other factors, just looking at the act itself, murder is usur. And therefore, you cannot make, unless, of course, he's a dead man walking, he's already dead. So if he's chayav misa and he's already dead, he left. He couldn't take this anymore. So if he's dead, and there's nothing to talk about. Now, I'll just point out, the Kesef Mishnah actually writes in the Rambam that the whole svara of whose blood is redder really only makes sense if the person is not chai misa, or maybe even if the person's not going to die anyway. But maybe if the person's going to die anyway, we no longer have the svara of whose blood is redder. Let me just give a few explanations of the machlokas, then I'll take questions. That's one explanation of the machlokas. Do we look at like the greater good, or do we look at the specific act? An explanation that was given by the Maharam Chaviv, he writes that maybe, and this I started to hear this in, you know, Noam's voice, I think, and Moshe was also saying this. The Maharam Chaviv says, you know what? Maybe everybody agrees. Reish Lakish agrees that if he's going to die anyway, we don't apply the svara of Maichazis. That question of Maichazis is one versus one, where one's going to live, one's going to die. If we're all going to die anyway, it doesn't apply anymore, and we can kill Yaakov. We can send him out there to be killed. You realize we're not actually even killing him. We're just sending him out, and they're killing him. I'm not actually killing him. No, their decision. They could still decide not to kill him. It's their decision to kill him. As opposed to not giving him over, is also just giving them access to killing us. They said either allow us access to one, or we're going to take access to 25. So Reish Lakish might hold, this is the second explanation from the Maharam Chaviv, one of the Rishonim of Pesachim. Second explanation of the Machlokas.
Is this the
Moon of Torah? No. It's not on the source sheet. The Maharam Chaviv says, maybe Reish Lakish agrees that if for sure he's going to die, you can hand him over. That's not a problem. But can you ever say for sure that he's going to die? No. I agree with Rav Yochanan. If for sure he's going to die, you can give him over. But what does that mean, for sure he's going to die? Maybe there'll be like an avalanche right now, and it'll like block the doorway, and they won't be able to get in. Maybe the gun will jam. How could you say, we're going to hand him over, because for sure he's going to die? Don't we have to be choshesh, because we're talking about his life, don't you have to be choshesh for the miut? And there's a miut chance that he won't be killed. There's a miut chance we'll be saved. A miracle will happen. They'll change their mind. There's a famous case, I'm trying to remember. There's that famous Brisker joke. You know that Brisker joke? No. Where the Brisker is about to be killed, Al Kiddush Hashem. So he says, okay, before you do it, I just want to, you know, there's a bracha to make. So he makes the bracha. That's a lot of kavani, makes the bracha. And the murderer is like so inspired by the bracha, so he decides, you know what, I'm going to let you go. And the Brisker goes, you know, because it's like a hefsek. He already made a bracha. That's the joke that they say. So maybe it's just a machlokes. Do you have to be choshesh for the miut that he won't die? Reish Lakish says you need to be choshesh. And until the last second, I think no one was even saying that. A nace can happen. You got to wait till the last second. So even if they're standing there and they're about to kill all of you, you can't kill one of them because maybe a miracle happened and he wouldn't have died. And Rav Yochanan says, come on. We got to work with it's a 99% chance he's going to die. We got to work with like general, regular perspectives. Hold off. I know you have questions. I wanted to give a few more explanations. That's the second explanation. Explanation number three. Maybe Reish Lakish agrees with Rav Yochanan. And Rav Yochanan's really right. If he's going to die anyway, you give him over. But Reish Lakish holds that there was a special takana made specifically for the situation of Goyim. If Goyim are demanding that you turn over a specific individual, we don't want the Goyim to be able to just come over to us and demand specific people, and therefore we give them over to save the greater good. And therefore it's like a response to times, you know, the one way to say it in like halachic terms is that normally you don't give your life except for the big three. There's an exception to that. If it's a shas hashmad. If it's a shas hashmad, you have to give your life for anything. Gemara says even like tying your shoelaces in a certain way. If the Jews tie their shoelaces in a certain way and a goy comes over and says, I hate the way you Jews do this and your whole religion, I want you to tie your shoelaces differently or else I'm going to kill you. If it's a shas hashmad where they're doing it to get Judaism, so then you have to give your life in that situation as well. So maybe Reish Lakish meant in a specific situation of like a shmad. And therefore it's more of a, and that's this Sefer Amunah B'Torah here, which is from Rav Moshe Sternbuch. He says maybe this is a specific case by Gentiles, and obviously the nafka mina would be if it's not a goy then that's threatening the life, if it's another Jew who's threatening the life. And the fourth explanation is by the Sefer Sanhedrin Katana on Sanhedrin. He says that the reason why Reish Lakish says you're not allowed is because even though he's going to die anyway, you're expediting his death, you're speeding up his death. And every moment of life is valuable. You're not allowed to end someone's life early. So therefore, Rav Yochanan says, you're allowed to die. He's going to die anyway, you can kill him. And you can even kill him and make him die a few minutes earlier than he was going to die. And Reish Lakish holds, you can't take away from the person, even, you know, there's halacha, when someone is in the throes of death, you're not supposed to touch him. Goseis. You're not supposed to touch him because it might cause him to die earlier. And we value even every moment of life. According to that, what does Rav Yochanan hold? So Rav Yochanan's going to have to hold that that's true, but the temporary extending of one person's life is not the same value of giving actual life to a whole group of people. Moshe has a tshuva where he wants to refer to it as a rodef, that the extra few minutes of his life is a rodef on the lives of the other 25 people. And therefore you're allowed to end his life in order to save them. A place where this would have been a very real halacha lemaisa nafkamina was at the World Trade Center on 9/11. There was apparently a order given by Vice President Cheney to shoot down any other planes that were coming near buildings. There's like a whole like thing machlokas and like research of the time about, did he do that on his own? Or he claims that he had spoken to President Bush and President Bush had given him the authority. But undercover people have like done research and they never found records of such a phone call. And there's a whole big debate if he made that decision on his own, which is not officially the protocol that the vice president can make that decision, or if he was just relaying, right? Because you remember Bush was in Florida and they flew him to an undisclosed location, I believe. But Cheney was in Washington, and apparently he gave the order to shoot down any other planes that were in the sky that weren't responding to the, you know, the call for all the planes to be landed. So here's a question. You have the second plane, and apparently he gave the order before the second plane hit the World Trade Center, but they didn't. The message for some reason wasn't relayed to the people on the ground, or whatever, to the Air Force. But Lemaisa, you have a plane that's Chas v'Shalom Lo Aleinu. It's speeding towards the second tower of the World Trade Center. It's filled with people who are going to die anyway. Can you shoot down that plane in order to save all the people in the building? Can you actively shoot down the plane? So according to Rav Yochanan, they're going to die anyway. Oh, but I'm cutting their life shorter by whatever, an extra few minutes. I know, but Rav Yochanan says you're allowed to. And Reish Lakish would hold, no, either our first explanation. It's categorically murder, and you cannot murder, even if it's going to save, it could have saved thousands of people probably, hundreds for sure, in the buildings. But you can't kill those people in the plane. That's categorically usher. Number two, maybe according to our second explanation, maybe you have to be choshesh that it won't happen. Maybe the pilot will miss. Maybe they're not necessarily going to die. Maybe they'll overtake the pilot and be able to, you know, pull the plane up at the last second. Our third explanation, so that was different, that's by Shmad specifically. But according to our fourth explanation, Reish Lakish would say you still can't. Why? Because those few minutes on the plane, that's still life. And we value every minute of life. And according to Rav Yochanan, no. If it's going to save people's lives, you're allowed to. So we have four explanations of this machlokas, Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. But Lamaisa, the machlokas stands. Rav Yochanan says you are allowed to kill in order to save the group. Seemingly because they're going to die anyway, but maybe not. Maybe just because there's a greater utilitarian good that comes out of it. And Reish Lakish holds you're not allowed to. The question is, what are we paskin? Are we paskin like Rav Yochanan or Reish Lakish? So who do we usually paskin like in a machlokas, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish? We almost always paskin like Rav Yochanan. And in fact, that is the way that the Beis Yosef and the Smag and the Meiri and the Ran and the Gos Maimonios, many Rishonim paskin like Rav Yochanan, because that is the halacha. We paskin like Rav Yochanan. However, the Rambam paskins explicitly like Reish Lakish. So I thought I'd put on the source sheet for you. In Hilchos Sotei HaTorah, Perikei, Halacha Hei, the Rambam paskins like Reish Lakish. And the Bach and the Taz and the Chidah and the Beis Hillel and Yoredeya, a bunch of other Achronim, all say we go with the Rambam. A little bit of discussion on the Rambam. The Rambam quotes both opinions. And Bach and the Chazon Ish argue about whether the Ra's really agreeing with one or not agreeing with one, which one he's choosing. But Lamaisa, it's a big mess because we don't know who we paskin like. Do we paskin like Reish Lakish or do we paskin like Rav Yochanan? The machlokas, though, between Rav Shlakish and Rav Yochanan was, again, specifically about the Seifa, a specified individual. And therefore, even if we paskin like Rav Yochanan, this is not really going to help our case with the car. Because the car that's speeding out of control and careening towards the group of kids, and you want to turn and kill this innocent bystander on the side of the road, is not a specific individual that was picked out. It's a absolutely innocent bystander that just happens to be on that spot in the road. According to Reish Lakish, you certainly wouldn't be allowed to do it, because they're not chayav misa. But even more so, according to Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, you wouldn't be allowed to do it because it's not a specified individual. It's not somebody who's saying, I want to either kill that group or kill him, and I want to kill him specifically. It's just an innocent bystander. And therefore, if the discussion of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, or Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, is talking about the Seifa, about where they chose someone, it has no bearing, really, on our case. The only question that really would help us, perhaps, is do you ever have the ability to choose on your own? If the group here come, if the murderer comes into the room and says, I will kill all of you, unless you give me one of you, you choose. Are you ever able to make that choice? So the Kesef Mishnah writes, as soon as you have to choose someone, it automatically triggers the principle of Maichazus. You can't make that decision of whose bread is blooder. In the earlier case where they already specified someone, you're not making the decision from a certain perspective. He's going to die anyway. Now it's just a question of, do we give over him? Do we spill a little bit of blood or a lot of blood? But he's going to die anyway. So according to the Kesef Mishnah, you definitely can never make that decision. As we said, there is a possibility to read Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon as going on the Reisha of the Harei V'Yal, of the Stam case, that maybe they're being makel about the Reisha. But even there, it still needs to be someone who's either going to die anyway or Chayav Misa. And this person on the side of the road, are they going to die anyway? Is the person on the side of the road going to die anyway? Certainly not. So even if we would take the more makel reading of the Tosefta, that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, who are ignored in the Yerushalmi, even if we would learn that they're going on the Reisha, when the Reisha says you can't give over a non-specified person, comes along Rabbi Yehuda and says, well, you can if he's going to die anyway. That's our most makel shita. You can give over a non-specified person if he's going to die anyway. Like Yaakov in our case. The gunman comes in and says, I'll kill all of you unless you choose one of you. Unless you give me Yaakov. And they say, choose one of you, and we all do a vote. And we choose Yaakov, and we're going to hand over Yaakov. We still wouldn't, that's, even though Rav Yehuda, according to the more makel way of reading, the Tosefta, allows that, that still doesn't help our case of the car. Why? Because the guy on the side of the road is not going to die anyway. He's safe right now. He's not only is he innocent, but he is completely safe right now. And you turning your car into him is not just picking a non-specified individual. It's picking a non-specified individual who not only is not chayav misa, he's also not going to die anyway. He's bachutz. He's not part of this discussion. And therefore, there really should be no justification. Even if we take the most makel reading, there should be no justification to program the car to kill the innocent person on the side instead of killing the people who it's heading towards. However, our story does not end here. 1:20 already? Is that really the time?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So, our story doesn't end here. The Chazon Ish writes in his Chidushim on Sanhedrin the following case. This is an amazing case. He writes, if a missile is headed towards a populated area, he wants to know if you can redirect the missile into a less populated area. It will certainly save lives, but it will kill the people. It will still kill people. And they weren't going to be killed otherwise. And now, because of you, they're going to be killed. This mamish sounds exactly like our question. Right? The missile is headed towards one group, and you are going to redirect the missile to hit another group. The Chazon Ish writes that it really should be usher, based on our analysis, because those people are innocent. He says, however, though, maybe you can argue that it's mutter. Why can you maybe argue that it's mutter? He says, because maybe the act of redirecting the missile is, in its essence, a maisa hatzala. It's an act of saving the populated area that it's headed towards. If it then ends up killing people, so then that's a very unfortunate result of your maisa hatzala. But it's not, in its essence, a maisa of hariga. Now, this suggestion of the Chazon Ish, let me, in order to flesh it out for you, I want to point out something very interesting, just historically, on this moral question. When the Chazon Ish printed his when the Kiddushim of the Chazon Ish were printed, I believe it was 2 years later that a very, very famous question was presented by a British philosopher or a professor named Philippa Foot. She had a very famous question that's been debated since then. It's the trolley question. You have a trolley car, and the trolley car is headed down on a path, a track, thank you. And you're standing on the side, and you're watching, and you see, you're on a bridge above watching the case, and you see that the trolley car is headed towards five workers. And you're screaming, they can't hear you. And the trolley car is out of control, and it's going to plummet into these five workers and kill the five workers. However, you happen to have in your hand the controls over the lever. And if you pull the lever, you're able to change the track, and it'll go on to another track. And on that track is one worker who's sitting there eating his lunch and has no idea what's going on. Should you turn the track? Right, you didn't do anything. You're just an innocent bystander. But right now, you see the track. The train is about to kill five, but you can turn the lever and instead kill one. Should you do it or not? So some of our immediate reaction might say, yeah, you should. You're going to be killing the one, although it's not really you. It's an out-of-control car that's going to kill someone anyway. Better to minimize the deaths. And then she asked, I believe, this is when I heard it. I heard it from a Harvard professor who has up on YouTube a whole series of lectures on justice. So, you know him? You've heard them? Oh, okay. So a bunch of his lectures are up. So he asked it. I don't know if this is the original way that Dr. Philippa Foot presented it or if this is his own addition. Let's say right now it's not the case that you're changing the lever. Let's say it's heading towards those five workers and there's nothing to do. There's no lever. But you're not the only person on the bridge right now. Next to you is a very heavy woman. And she's also looking at this case. And you realize that if you just give her like a little kick with your foot, she'll fall over the bridge, land on the track, and the train will hit into her instead. She's a large woman. She'll stop the train, and she'll save the five people down on the track. But she'll die, obviously. So should you do that? And then everyone's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That you shouldn't do. But what's the difference? What's the difference between pulling the track and pulling the lever and killing the one worker as opposed to kicking the lady and she'll block it? Now you'll say, well, come on, because she's on the bridge, she's on the track. But he's not on the track where the train is going, he's on another track. He's totally fine right now. And by you pulling the lever, you're killing him. So what's the difference? Why do we feel that there's a difference? And it could be the Chazon Ish's Ha'ara makes the explanation for the difference. According to the Chazon Ish, the act of turning the track, that is an act of Hatzalah. You're directing the train away from the five people. Okay, but down that track is another person. Okay, you're right, that is the result of what's going to happen. But my act is primarily an act of Hatzalah. But by the woman, pushing a woman off of a bridge in front of a train is not an act of Hatzalah. That's an act of murder. Oh, but it's a good murder because it's going to save five people. That's true, but the act itself is not a Maisa Hatzalah. It's a Maisa Hariga. So it could be that the Chazon Ish's suggestion would address this extra knach of the woman on the bridge that's brought up by the Harvard professor or the British philosopher and professor Philippa Foot. Although the Chazon Ish himself does not go with it lahalacha. He doesn't say for sure that it's correct. Many of the other Achronim, like the Tzitz Eliezer and others, argued with the Chazon Ish. There is an extra addendum to this, and I heard this from Rabbi Isaac Rice. I don't know if anybody knows who he is. But he did some research, and he found a really amazing point, which is very nogea for our question of the self-driven cars. He found in a sefer called Zohar LeDavid, which are a sefer written by a Talmud of the Chazon Ish, where he writes over, you know, experiences he had with the Chazon Ish. He was there when this question was posed to the Chazon Ish. And it wasn't about a missile. That was the way that the Chazon Ish rewrote the question. The original question, listen to what the original question was. A taxi driver from Haifa was driving down a hill, and his brakes went. And he was headed towards a group of people. And instead, I have it printed. And instead, he turned his car into a single individual, killed one individual, but saved the group of people. And he came to the Chazon Ish to ask if he's chayiv, if he has to do tshuva for what he did, for having murdered, or if what he did was the right thing to do, because he saved the group of people. That was the case that was asked to the Chazon Ish. And that's almost exactly our case. And it was because of that case, of this question of the taxi driver, that the Chazon Ish came up with this whole question about the missile going towards the populated area. So where do we end? Where we end, if we had to summarize, from the straight analysis of the sugya, l'chorit should be usser. And the question of the trolley and the question of post to the Chazon Ish, seemingly the answer should be it's usser. My chazis, you're not allowed to make a decision to kill a person, and you have to allow nature to go its course and to kill the people that it's destined to kill. However, the one way to argue with this would be through the svar of the Chazon Ish, that if something can be determined to be defined as a maisa hatzala, as opposed to a maisa hariga. Now, I'm not sure turning a car into somebody can be defined as a maisa hatzala, as opposed to a maisa hariga. It could be that that's considered a maisa hariga, but that was the case that the Chazon Ish was talking about. So that would be the only petach, I would think. Again, this is not a halacha l'maisa shir, mitz Hashem. I mean, I hope you don't have to be in the situation. And if it is, please ask somebody who knows a lot more than me to paskin up this type of shaila. But seemingly, the only svara that would allow to kill the individual to save the group would be the svara of the Chazon Ish. Although, again, by a car, I'm not so sure that we could call that a maisa hatzala, driving into another person. You know, you might say swerving is a maisa hatzala. So I swerve out of the way. And then if it ends up killing someone, so I end up killing someone. But it's a maisa hatzala because I swerve before that point. So that's something that you would need to be done on. The only other question that would maybe make a difference is that it make a difference that it's programming the car as opposed to actually going through the act itself. Although I would think that when the people who are programming the car, if they care about halacha, so they should be programming it in light of what would be the proper halachic response in that situation. So we will have to remain to be seen how, I guess, Congress paskins on this issue and how they decide how to program the cars. But I think it's a fascinating question in light of these current event issues about these self-driving cars. Yeah.
Swerve away from the people.